podcast for heroes in the world of Overwatch. This is The Payload.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Payload. This is an Overwatch podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com. I am Jimmy, DJ Tyrant, and with me is Kevin. And filling up the spot up top there is John. He, unfortunately, is a bit under the weather, so he won't be joining us for this, our 16th episode of Payload. How are you doing, Kevin?
Dude, I am good. It's definitely... definitely going to be interesting, I think, trying to do a show with no Mr. John. So we'll see. I think we'll have a good time. There's a lot to talk about. Overwatch is in a crazy good place right now. So we will, I guess, just jump right into it. Man, how was your week? Did you get a chance to play the game much?
I haven't had a chance to play too much. I've been just busy with all the hero stuff. And also over the weekend, I watched a lot of the Hearthstone stuff. So, I mean, I've just been really busy with esports stuff.
That's fair, man. That's fair. I know that feeling. I'm getting them ready right now to leave to go to Las Vegas. I have a conference coming up here in the first week of April. So I'm frantically trying to sort of like, I got a ton of stuff going on with work. We're working on marketing plans for a couple of sponsors, like just crazy stuff happening. And so I honestly, like, I've logged into the game maybe twice and it's like, it's for a couple minutes at a time. When I do get in, I play a couple of rounds just to see what's changed, what's new in the patch. Like, I think I'm still a single digit level in the beta. That's how bad it is.
Oh no.
Like, yeah, it's been rough.
Well, I can rest easy at night that it's not that bad for me.
Yeah, no, it's well, and the other thing is, right, is like when I do get time, I'm still trying to load balance across multiple games. So trying to play a little bit of Hearthstone. I finished Heroic League Explorers the other day. I'm still trying to play a fair bit of Heroes because I'm trying to get my rank one back because that game makes me very angry.
Yeah, I did see you playing that the other night, and yeah, you're putting a lot of work into that.
Well, I hit rank one like four times, dude, and then I just went on this terrible streak where I kept like win one lose two, and my MMR is still basically the same, but I'm like rank 15. It's like, what? It's just terrible. So I'm gonna try to fix that over the weekend, I think, and then yeah, be off and running. But we got serious Overwatch stuff to talk about. Are you ready to talk Overwatch news this week, sir?
Yeah, definitely. And that's going to lead us into, obviously, our first news segment, or first segment of the show, the news.
This week in Overwatch.
And Kevin, we didn't have a whole lot of news until today. And just a couple hours ago, Blizzard released a new patch for Overwatch, the beta and everything. So we're actually just going to go over that because it's basically the big news of the week, I think, as far as the game itself goes. And there were a lot of changes. So let's take a look at that. We did have, I thought this was interesting. I didn't really think it was a problem, but quick melee damage got decreased from 50 to 30, and the cooldown decreased from 1.5 seconds to 1 second. I guess it was a problem, and they're taking care of it now, which I find interesting.
I'm honestly super glad they did it. It always felt to me like the availability of that like large burst of damage on melee was just so significant. I played when, like, before the beta went down back before Christmas. I was playing a lot of in-house games with guys I know from like old school World of Warcraft days. And so we'd just on a like random like weekend be like, all right, let's just see how many people we can round up. We give people a couple hours notice and we'd get, you know, a dozen, 15 people all hanging out in a voice chat together. And then we'd jump in and we'd play some games. And the one guy, my buddy Zach, plays a pretty mean Tracer. He's pretty good at Tracer. And he would run in and he'd like empty a clip into you, but it wouldn't kill you because it's not a ton of damage if like all of it doesn't connect. And then just like melee you to death because the melee was just so powerful. And I think that's something that the developers have watched as everyone is just heavily reliant on melee. To me, melee should be like a last last ditch, like worst choice thing. Like you don't have time to reload, you're up close and personal and you don't want to be. So you just hit that button and pray. It shouldn't be like a core part of your strategy unless you're doing something like a, I don't know, like a Roadhog hook, right? If you're just legitimately running around playing Melee Tracer, like something is wrong with how much damage that ability is dealing, if that's the case. So.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, you're completely right with that. It's really interesting to see just how they decided to change that. And yeah, you're right. The melee shouldn't be the core of your damage there. And like you said, Tracer kind of is able to do that a little bit. And maybe this is targeted towards her, but maybe they just saw across the board that it was a problem. Just were like, it's getting knocked down.
Well, I mean, there's only a handful of characters where it's honestly going to be hugely problematic. I think the fix here is nice because in theory, right, you can attack more often to the point that, like, if you attacked three times in 3 seconds now, as opposed to twice in 3 seconds, it would do 90 damage instead of 100. Like, it's a very, very minor damage nerf, right? And in terms of intervals, in theory, in some places, depending on the breakpoint and how many melee attacks you could land, it might actually be a benefit because you might be able to get a second attack off where you couldn't before, and you'll actually do more damage. But in general, getting close enough to melee is a huge risk. Being in a position to melee is not a place you want to be with most of these characters. So a shorter cooldown where you can deal a little less damage to me feels like a really nice trade-off, where if you're able to deke somebody out or like strafe out of their line of sight and back in and hit a second melee, great. And you can actually do that faster and more fluidly. And it's going to feel, like they say in the patch notes, more responsive, but it's not going to be, you know, I empty my clip as Reaper. I didn't kill him, but now I can deal a third of their health pool in a single melee attack. Like, it's just, if you look at the health pool of a lot of the characters who are dying to melee attacks, that 50 damage was a huge portion, right? That was like a quarter of their total health pool, which is massively yeah. significant.
Yeah, and so I think I feel like we've talked that a little bit to death. I mean, it's just very simple. The melee got adjusted, and it shouldn't have a huge impact overall on the game. Let's go move on to Bastion. Bastion is tank mode. The duration was reduced from 10 to 8 seconds, and this is his ultimate there, and it's always been really good. And there's just their developer comments is they like how the ability is performing, but it's lasting just a bit too long for the opposing team to be able to react to it. And I'm happy with this change. I think it's okay.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a net neutral thing. You're generally only playing Bastion on defense anyways, and his ult can be really disruptive on defense, so shortening the window where you have to be a little bit more selective maybe in when you choose to trigger it before you actually take advantage of it is probably a positive, I guess. I don't know. I don't see this as having meaningful impact on like mid to high level gameplay. This is probably just a quality of life thing for how much raw damage that can deal at lower levels when people are struggling to line of sight it or avoid the damage. And that's probably fine. And probably fine is going to be my like theme for all of these changes. They're probably
yeah,
fine.
Exactly. I know they keep releasing these patch notes like right before we do shows on Thursdays.
It's great. Why it's that's great, happening, I don't know, but let it.
Because we have no way to really play him before the show, unfortunately. But Genji has always been a really hot topic as far as heroes. And oh, is he overpowered? Is he not powered enough? He recently got changed. Now that change, I think this is basically reverting it. His health is being increased from 150 to 200.
Yeah.
And the Shoryuken, the damage is being reduced by 20%. So what Blizzard came out and said is, we've been listening to feedback and watching data very closely on Genji, especially since we recently lowered his health. Overall, that change did put him in a better place, but we want to try an alternative change by lowering his damage output instead of his survivability.
This is cool, actually. Like, what I read here is not that they want this to be his final form, where he has the extra health and the lower damage. I actually think they liked where he was balance-wise in that last patch, and I really did. I really felt like lowering his health gave him a much better feel. Like, he felt like he was very powerful, he was still very dangerous, but it was easier to introduce counterplay. We talked about that a whole bunch on the show like a week or two ago, but all the counterplay that lower health number opened up. I actually think this is a test. Straight up, like, this is very much we're just dropping some stuff in here to see.
Are you Are you saying this is a beta?
No. Not even beta, because beta happens. We are like 2 months out from release, right? They are at a point where they are like finalizing some stuff here. But I like the idea that they dropped this little patch on us with all these little things in it, because none of this stuff is really like going to have sweeping effects on the bottom line in the game. But I wouldn't be surprised at all for them to try this and find that with lower damage and higher health, he's less interesting to play. He's better as sort of a like a glass cannon, just kind of charge in and knock somebody off, trade 1-1, 2-1. I think it's likely, honestly, that we'll see his health pool go back down and other changes get tweaked again, because lower health Genji felt super good and they acknowledge that here. So my hope is that they're just experimenting with this to see what happens when he's not as lethal. And if it were me, I would say him being super lethal but very, very fragile is the right place. Where he was really good. So I'm glad they're testing this, but I honestly believe it will go back the other way.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, because that jump to 200 health is that's quite a significant amount of survivability. I mean,
it's two melees now. Two melees now.
It was one melee before, now it's two. So we'll just have to see how that ends up. This Hondo change, I find very interesting. Scatter Arrow, his ability that you can turn on and off, I believe. I can't remember. I don't play much Hanzo at all. The fragments will no longer be calculated as a headshot against an enemy player. In the comments from Blizzard, where we wanted to reduce some of the more frustrating elements of Scatter Arrow while maintaining its overall power level. So just, it sounds like it just means they can't headshot players when they fragment.
Yeah, that's all it is. They just made it so that his ability doesn't have that ability now where the like rebounds on scatter or the multiple target points on scatter have the ability to count as headshots, because it hits like it ricochets off walls and terrain. It can hit multiple enemies. And the idea that that should count as a headshot always seemed a little questionable. Like having the option to like shoot it down a hallway and do a bunch of damage or catch somebody with a ricochet is super cool and something that's, I think, basically unique to Hanzo in the game right now. I don't think there's anybody else who really gets that ability. Arguably, maybe like, you know, Junkrat's main attack, his primary fire can bounce around a little bit. But in terms of like raw abusing geometry, I think Hanzo is pretty much in a more or less unique position that way. But the split arrow counting as a headshot, like that's just a Hail Mary prayer thing. And if you just like shoot around a corner and happen to get a headshot and happen to get a kill because of it, like that doesn't feel good for anybody, because you're not actually doing that strategically. There's no way to strategically plan on getting a headshot around a corner.
Yeah, I mean, if you're on the receiving end of that, you're just like, oh, feels bad, man.
That's the 360 no scope of this game, and I don't want it. So I'm happy to see it go.
Get rid of that. And another change to Junkrat, the Rip Tire, his ultimate ability, once again receives a change, and now the health of the tire is being reduced from 150 to 100. I'm pretty okay with this, because I feel like the Rip Tire is super impactful, and it was frustrating sometimes if it was launched relatively close to you and you didn't really have a chance to blow it up. But I mean, I guess it's a little bit of risk reward, but the developers did talk about in this patch note, recent changes to the Rip Tire have helped it become more viable and opened up new options for enemy counters. However, the health they felt like was too high, so many times it felt impossible to encounter or to counter. And so that's along the feelings that I had about it. I really like this ultimate. I think it's a great one to have in the game. But yeah, a lot of times it just felt a little too overwhelming.
It's such a powerful ult, right? Like it's already incredible how large the blast radius is, how much damage it does. The fact that it can climb over all sorts of terrain just makes it feel really difficult to avoid. And if it sneaks up on you and you only get a chance to turn around and put a couple of shots into it at 150 health, I mean, that's the same amount of health as several characters, right? It's the same amount of health as post-nerf, pre-recent change Genji or several other characters. Like, that's a lot of hit points to have to chew through. I think it's probably a good healthy change for the game. The one comment I actually read online I thought was really funny. People were talking about this ability, and the guy said that for the mindless Rip Tire kills he's seen, he really thinks he might start watching Junkrat play the game again, because before it was like you just knew exactly what was going to come out and it wasn't interesting at all.
You're just jamming Escape. You're like, I don't even want to see this.
I know how this ends. A little tire turns around a corner, everybody explodes. The end.
That's how I feel with Bastion and Torbjorn plays of the game.
Yeah. They're the exact same play every time.
The turret's going to kill three people.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah. May. This is actually a very, very interesting change, I feel like. May, the endothermic blaster, the primary fire, it's being changed where they're lowering the time to freeze by 15%. And the secondary fire, they're adding damage falloff. Okay, this kind of adds it in line to what they did, I think, with Soldier 76 when the beta came back up this year. And they also lowered the fire rate by 15%. So it's going to be very interesting to see how these changes. I mean, it's on one hand, it's obviously the buff because the primary fire, you get to freeze a lot faster now. And that secondary fire is just not going to fire out as fast. And the developers, their comments were, since the last patch, we've seen May perform significantly better across the board. Even though our overall power level is in a much better place now, too much of that power is coming from the alternate fire. This change moves some of that power from alternate fire to our primary fire. Yeah, lowering that freeze time, that's scary. I feel like that is real scary.
It's definitely the more significant of the two changes, because getting somebody frozen, if you're coordinating in any way, is definitely like an instant kill. And we've talked about this at some length before, but May is one of those characters where you don't take a May if you're trying to be like the lone gunman, lone wolf hero type player, right? You go play Reaper or McCree. May is very much a character that sets up engagements in a very like tactical way with the freezes and the, you know, barriers. And she's very much a zoning style of character, and you really want to have her on your team if you're playing with a coordinated group. So making that freeze happen even faster, I think, is huge at the expense of some damage fall off and a slower fire rate on her alt. I mean, her alt wasn't super good in the first place, so I think I'm okay with this.
Yeah, and I feel like the alt was just a huge like skill shot. It's like one of the harder shots, I feel like, to land in the game. It's, I mean, the lowering firing rate, it's not the end of the world for her, but this primary fire, where she is a very control-y type of hero where she can control choke points. You're not going to want to blast through a door if you have the May behind there and you're just going to get frozen that much faster. It's going to be really scary for engagements, I think.
Speaking
of engagements, though, Symmetra also got changes. They keep playing with this teleporter ability. The teleporter obviously is very, very powerful. They're upping the cost once again by 30%, and they were just concerned that it didn't feel very rewarding to find the teleportation pad and actually kill it. So they want to just give more time between her being able to redeploy that teleporter. And I'm okay with this change. I think it's ultimately good for the game because teleporter is, like, I think we talked about this when we talked about supports. Teleporter, you could argue, is one of the best ultimates in the game.
Yeah, I think bear with me because I don't play a ton of Symmetra. She's never been a character I was good at or really enjoyed. A part of me wonders if they shouldn't have approached this in terms of the teleporter's recharge. What I mean by that is the first teleporter didn't come into play too early, I don't think. It took long enough into a typical length game to actually get a teleporter into play. Right now, with a 30% change flat across the board, there's going to be games where you only see maybe two. Right, more often than not, like one or two would be the limit based on a typical length game right now, at least in terms of like one side, right, attacking or defending. It's already a very high skill cap ability. You have to place it somewhere safe so that it doesn't get destroyed. There's a lot of I think like quantitative drawbacks to trying to take advantage of the teleporter, because statistically it's not going to live forever. Someone's going to figure it out pretty fast, especially, again, like I'm always thinking about this in terms of how it's going to look in organized play. So 30% is a huge amount, and I think I would have liked to have seen it so that the first teleporter came into play just as early as it had been, and then it maybe took longer to get that second one up, because they're obviously still messing with this, and that's a place where they could make it so that you don't, as Symmetra, just feel like your ultimate takes twice as long as everybody else's to come into play and is worthless if it gets destroyed. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see anybody sticking with Symmetra after that first teleporter gets eliminated. I don't see anybody trying to get that charge up a second time because it's going to take way too long and it's going to be too late in the game to be significant, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm hearing you there. And the one thing is, as this game matures and grows and is it does come out to release and comes to a wider audience, obviously, placing those teleports is going to be harder and harder and harder as people learn where those spots are.
Yep.
And I feel like this, as that happens, they might bring this back down a bit more so that they are able to use it more often. Symmetra is able to use it more often. But we'll just have to see. It's kind of one of those just, you kind of have to have a lot of playtime on it and see where it goes from there. And the next change that they have is for Winston. Now, I really like this change. The jump pack, the cooldown was reduced from 8 seconds to 6 seconds. And they were talking about Winston's survivability took a hit when they recently made changes to the barrier projector. Overall, Winston being less reliant on a single ability has been good, but they're looking to bump his power back up in other ways. Lowering the cooldown on the jump pack allows him to use the ability as a normal engage tool, while also giving him more flexibility to use it as an escape option or to continue pressuring the enemy. So 2 seconds might not seem like a lot on the surface, but over the grand scheme of things, over a 5-6 minute game, that's quite a number of more jump packs you can use over the course of the game.
I mean, I think the commentary in the developer notes is exactly right. It's going to be about now also being able to use it as a way to engage and know that you can also use it as a way to get back out. Before, you sort of had to choose whether you're going to try to like lumber in and have it available as your escape tool, or if you were going to use it to jump in, contest a point, get onto a capture point, you know, jump to the aid of an ally, something like that. Now it's like you can do both. You've got a ton more mobility. This is actually going to be very significant, I think, for Winston's in terms of getting back into the fight after a death, because a 25% reduction in cooldown means in an average like run back, you're probably going to get an extra couple in, because that's a huge shift. Like, you're going to have way more mobility, and mobility is already, I've talked mobility to death. Mobility is probably singularly, I think, the most important feature of any character in the game. So to get that big of a mm-hmm. mobility buff is massive. This is, I think, the single biggest change in these patch notes.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you. And I want to go on that mobility part again. And I've talked about this in episodes past, but I feel like defense is at a fairly large disadvantage on that first point, because if they get killed, they have to walk back the entire map. And having this Winston, though, will help quite a bit, because you're going to be able to get at least 2 jump packs, I think, walking back. I'd have to do the math, but I think it's about 2 or 3 that you'd be able to go, and you just be in the fight contesting that point just a little bit sooner. And I'm excited to try Winston out again. I haven't had success with him at all really in the game, but I'm willing to try him out some more.
Yeah, I really like it, especially for overtime, because I've always found that mm-hmm. that's when Winston can shine, is jumping in and getting onto a payload or a capture point during overtime. And every ounce of mobility at that point is so critical. When you're making that run back, you're grabbing a Lucio, you're speed boosting, you're doing everything you can. This big extra couple of jumps, being able to just leap in onto that point, disrupt, push people around, wait till your teammates can get on, leap and get up in the face of somebody who's trying to deal damage to a teammate. Like, that's super significant on both sides. You're right. I think of it as an offensive thing, but it's probably got really good applications on both, because mobility is just, again, number one across the board, always the most important.
Yeah, and going along the warrior tank path here, Zarya, the particle cannon that she uses for a weapon, they're increasing the minimum damage by 25%. And they were saying Zarya's main strength comes from her ability to absorb damage to increase her own power. While we don't want to undermine that core functionality, we also want to make sure she feels as though she provides enough meaningful contribution in combat, even at lower power levels. I am so happy with this change. I always felt like that gun just tickled people at the beginning of matches and the beginning of fights. So I'm happy to see this. She should be a bit more of a threat now, and just be more threatening to the enemy team when she's moving in and starting up her attacks there.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing particularly more than that to add. This gets a big old thumbs up. That's really all there is to it. A little more damage on underplayed tank. Okay, I accept.
Yeah, and then the final change was to Zenyatta Discord Orb. It's now removed by immunity effects. For example, the May Kyra Freeze, Zarya Barriers, and Zenyatta Transcendence. And they commented that Discord Orb is a powerful tool that has proven a little too difficult to deal with at times. So we're allowing for some options to counter the ability while maintaining its strength. So this is kind of interesting. They're kind of introducing ways to remove the Discord Orb now. And maybe this will bring up those heroes that they mentioned, May and Zarya here, to kind of counter Zenyatta.
I mean, I certainly hope so. But ultimately, that's not a ton of counterplay. I mean, adding two effectively, because counting Zenyatta against yeah. Zenyatta is kind of a
that's not that's not fair,
right? So two characters that can counter Zenyatta out of a cast of 20 odd, like, no, that's not significant. I do think it maybe makes Zarya a slightly more attractive tank because she can easily barrier it and become immune to it, which is a unique functionality for her now as a tank character. And May's Cryo Freeze dropping it is kind of like, again, meh. Like, these are two characters whose absolute strengths are coordinated teams. And in those environments, okay, I can absolutely see how this could start to swing, and you could actually build a composition that maybe reflected that, where you took mm-hmm. a whole bunch of the same, you know, recently buffed characters that have all these benefits to them, add a Zarya and a May into your lineup in place of where you might have previously taken, like, a Reinhardt and, I don't even know, instead of a May, hard to say, maybe a Junkrat. Like, yeah, there's probably something to be said for trying to get those characters more playability by giving them that specific out. But I don't think this is a major, it's just a quality of life change in my mind.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the end of the patch notes for today. I give them a thumbs up. Kevin, what about you?
Like, as a whole, sure, yeah.
As a whole,
I mean,
yeah,
on the whole, up. When these patch notes came out, I read through them and was like, there's nothing in there that makes me unhappy. I don't disagree with any of that. I maintain, just again, based on the phrasing, that I think they're going to revert the Genji changes. And if that's the case, I would be super happy because I liked low health Genji. But across the board, nothing in there screams, this is a terrible, this isn't Rip Rhaegar levels of Blizzard changes in recent memories. So we're not getting into it. Yeah. We're not getting into it.
No,
wrong game.
No, this is an Overwatch show.
But they did
and
good.
Speaking of Overwatch, just yesterday they actually announced kind of their grand plans for really exploring the world of Overwatch. We had this teased at BlizzCon. Everyone, including everyone on the show, kind of lost their collective minds over how they were going to bring the story of Overwatch, because you could just tell just from the announcement trailer, this was a very rich world with a story that Blizzard definitely wanted to tell. And so they announced yesterday about how they're going to roll these out. They talked about the animated shorts that they teased at BlizzCon last year. And over the next 2 months, they're going to use these shorts to really talk about and explore the heroes of Overwatch. And the first one actually releases this upcoming Monday, I believe. Is it correct? Let's see. The 21st. Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific time. So 12 p.m. Blizzard time. And it is going to be for Winston. And I am all sorts of excited for this. And it's actually going to be premiering. This is very interesting, actually, how they're going to premiere this out. On Xbox.com/Overwatch. Don't panic like everyone on the Facebook post did. You can watch this on your PC. You don't have to have an Xbox. You can just go to Xbox.com/Overwatch and watch it. And this I find to be one of the more interesting things about it. I didn't really read this. I actually skimmed over it, and then I went through the blog post and read it again. There's going to be actually a 60-second teaser on Better Call Saul on AMC Sunday night. That's kind of big. That's a big marketing push for the game.
Yeah, I mean, Okay, let me backtrack. Number one, super excited about these. Love to see what Disney Pixar, I mean Blizzard, can put out in terms of quality here. I think they've done an incredible job, and I think they're going to showcase just how comprehensive their skill set is now in terms of being able to produce not just games, but entertainment, right? And that's mm-hmm. that's a big thing for Blizzard, and it's a big push for them to diversify right now. So I'm all about that. I think that's very cool. Secondly, to your point about the marketing thing, Blizzard has gone totally bananas in the last couple of years. That was a Winston pun. In terms of how they're handling their marketing, right? Like, we saw more money, I think, and more effort spent on the Warlords of Draenor advertising campaign than Blizzard had ever spent on anything prior to that. I saw those ads in every bar I went to in small town Saskatchewan. Like, it was just everywhere. You couldn't avoid it. Mm-hmm. Their media spend was through the roof. They had the Gore Howl in New York. They had all these things. And that's carried forward. We've seen it for the Hearthstone expansions. They're advertising Whispers of the Old Gods right now with painted walls and murals all over North America, along with, I'm sure, a ton of digital advertising, TV advertising, etc. Overwatch is not yet out, so maybe it's like there's a little room yet for them to sort of like take their time and just like start to try and develop the interest level. But this is somewhere where I think we've only seen this, like, them scratch the surface of how hard they're going to push Overwatch. I imagine that, especially given that this is a console game and how successful Diablo 3 was because it was a console game, they very much are going to be like, all right, how much money does it take to get this thing all over everywhere? And during primetime Sunday night television is huge. Like, that's a slot that people pay big money for. So to see Overwatch get that kind of representation from Blizzard, especially for something like this where there's no direct, I don't think, to them benefit, like they're not selling these shorts, they're just playing them. So to advertise them that heavily just to help build the audience for the game, that's incredible.
Yeah, and what I really like about their overall plan for introducing the world of Overwatch to people is it's not just these animated shorts. The animated shorts are like the first step, and they're going to be the first things we see come to fruition, obviously, this upcoming Monday, and I am excited for that. I think everyone's excited for that. There's going to be digital comic shorts. They're going to be free digital comics leading up to the launch of Overwatch in May, and created in collaboration with a variety of writers and artists. Their first 6 issue of comic shorts will focus on a variety of heroes such as Roadhog, Junkrat, and Reinhardt. And they actually showed in the blog post a cover of one of the comics that's going to debut in April. It has McCree on it, and it looks great. And I am super excited for comics. I love comics. I've really kind of gotten back into comics over the past couple of years. And just seeing all this free content that they're giving out to. In the grand scheme of things, it's advertisement for the game. But it's building this rich world, and it's something I think every Blizzard fan can really just appreciate because of how rich their stories are.
It's interesting to me, right? Because I have played the entire catalog of all the Blizzard games right back to day one, and I have all of these very like specific memories of moments from the different games, right? The first time you got into Duriel's room in Act 2 in Diablo 2 and just got absolutely obliterated, or, you know, whatever. Like, there's all these little things that you just, you can't shake the memory of because they were so significant to you. But they're all moments, right, that were very hard to get a good, like, visual, expressive way to re-experience them multiple times, or to have that experience be impressive in a strictly, like, cinematic style sense. Plus, it was different for everybody. Whereas this way, as opposed to, like, we talked a lot about potentially introducing a campaign into Overwatch so people could play through the character stories and learn more about them that way. But that experience could be, like, a positive or a negative. It could be better or worse for different players, and it may not be consistent. Whereas this way, they can tell all these stories, keep it consistent, keep it memorable, and have a new product, right? I mean, if they put this collection when it's done out as like a, you can buy these comic books and the shorts all on DVD, here's a box, I'll just throw my wallet at my screen until the Overwatch stuff all comes out, right? Like,
yeah,
they know what they're doing, and I think this is super exciting. Also, out of the characters that we know are coming out right away, oh my god, I want Junkrat, give it to me now.
Yeah, seriously. And on your point about, oh, they could do this as campaigns and stuff like that, You have to realize that's a lot of just development time.
But I mean, this is just
game development time.
This is just as much time that they're just spending on really high end graphic design, cinematic, Pixar level stuff, right? In which case, great. Like, that's fine. I think they've made an active choice to do it this way instead, because they are trying to diversify their portfolio. They are trying to introduce this game to a different audience. I got super excited watching the Overwatch trailer, and don't get me wrong, like, I'm still super excited about it. I geek every time I watch that trailer. But I imagine being like an 8 or a 9 year old kid, okay, like the age I was when I really got into Blizzard the first time, watching that trailer and being like, I want to be a hero. I want to help Tracer out. I want to wear the power glove. That could be me, right? Like, the ability to identify with these stories and not just play a game where you get yelled at by angry people on Xbox Live, but actually have something like a whole world that you identify with. This is a whole new thing that they're doing that it speaks to me because I'm a Blizzard fan, but it's going to speak to a whole new generation of people who didn't grow up with any of the other Blizzard franchises. In my mind, that's where they're going to get the biggest win out of this.
Yeah, most definitely. And yeah, we're all excited for this. And wait, there's more. They actually announced in that same post, there is graphic novels coming as well. First one being called First Strike. And it's going to talk about the global robot uprising that unfolded decades before where the game is going to be in Overwatch the present time. Written by Mickey Nelson. He is one of the writers at Blizzard. I forget, he has a massive portfolio. He's been there at Blizzard for forever. And it's exploring the early days of Overwatch. And it's going to focus on some of the founding members of the Overwatch team, so like Soldier 76, Torbjorn, Reaper, and Reinhardt. And it's going to be really exciting to see how this all comes together. I just can't wait. And thankfully, our first taste is coming Monday.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's going to be, I think, hard to keep up with it all, especially like if you're a collector and you like having the complete whatever to do with a given game or a given franchise. Like, I have all of the World of Warcraft collector's editions. I have all of the art books that Blizzard's put out. I have all these things. And like, if I get started on Overwatch, right, like I've pre-ordered the Origins edition, I'm going to buy a physical collector's edition, I'm going to buy it on Xbox. Like, I'm already looking at myself in the mirror going like, how much money are you prepared to spend on this game universe? Because this is getting totally out of hand. But honestly, I think they're doing it super smart. Like, the physical product side of things is a really good win for them, because that's something where, unlike, you know, you could buy one disc of Overwatch for your Xbox and then like play with your friends or like loan it amongst you and your family or whatever, and maybe there's not a lot of like add-on resale potential. This is something where it's like everybody's gonna want their own copy. Like, I want that graphic novel for me that I'm gonna keep and put in my closet and never let anyone see or touch. Like, they're doing some really smart things and making this universe accessible to a whole bunch of people who maybe don't even plan on playing the game.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, along the sides of what you were saying about ordering multiple copies of this game, I already have it pre-ordered for PC and PS4. So, and what I wanted to go with that, though, is there's been interesting news, not specifically in Overwatch, but in console land in general, and Rocket League. I'm pretty sure you've heard about this. Rocket League just recently released on Xbox One, and they basically announced that Microsoft has given them the green light to go ahead and try to have cross-platform gameplay. So between all three of the systems that Rocket League is on, Xbox, PS4, and PC. Now, I want to segment this that we absolutely do not think that PC will be able to play with console ever for Overwatch. I don't think that's ever going to be a thing. But the possibility of opening up Xbox and PS4 playing against each other, just the thought of that is really cool.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't cross to console, from console to PC, right? Like, we've talked about that. We've beat it to death. The ability for the console markets to play together, I think if there's a way to make that happen, yeah, by all means. And if Rocket League and a handful of other titles are going to sort of pave the way for that, great. But just please, like, when I want to sit and relax and be the number one controller Widowmaker, right? Like, don't put me up against people that can twitch reflex on their keyboard and mouse and make me look stupid, because that's not going to be fun for anyone.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think that actually we might be winding down a little bit. It was a little bit light on news outside of the patches, outside of the announcement of Digital Short. So, I mean, we'll be back next week and talk about our impressions about that Digital Short. And I imagine they'll all be positive.
I can't imagine they won't be. Yeah,
I know. But anyways, this is The Payload. We are going to actually go through our emails. If you would like to send us an email, you can email thepayload@blizzpro.com. We love receiving your emails, and it really gives us just more to talk about and hear from the people who are just as hyped up about this game as us. We did get an email this week. Hey guys, love the podcast. Hope to have you guys on Mind the Support class sometime. My question for discussion is, do you guys feel that there are any missing characters you were hoping to see? Maybe a mechanic you dreamed of, or some art you saw that remains unclaimed? Keep up the great work. Kyle Alphalance. Thanks, first of all, Kyle, for that email. I had to think a little bit about this. Missing characters, it's a tough one to really kind of think about, but I was thinking we can look at something more like hero mechanics to agree. We've seen crazy stuff in Heroes work out, like Cho'Gall, where two players are playing one hero, Lost Vikings, three units in one hero. But we haven't seen Overwatch push the boundaries too much here yet. I'm almost wondering, what if we had something that introduced a stealth hero or a way to temporary stealth area of effect, or some way to bring up an element of surprise to a team? And obviously, stealth is a very, very powerful ability, so it would be very carefully balanced. And it would be interesting to see something like that, or potentially a hero that could burrow or hide or some way and just be able to have some sort of surprise attack, I think could be interesting. It might be a little too much at this point in the game because of how far along we obviously are in the design process, but it's something I kind of would like them to push the boundaries on. Did you have a chance to really kind of think about this question at all? It's very open-ended. It's a lot to think about. What do you think, Kevin?
I did think about it, and it's funny. This is something I've actually spent a lot of time thinking about and kind of have a pre-existing answer for. I don't know that we've talked about it at length on the show specifically, but for me, the thing I've enjoyed the most thus far about the Overwatch universe and the characters they've introduced into the game because of the landscape of that universe is that it's incredibly diverse, right? We've got a range of characters where, off the top of my head, without even looking, right, I know that there's like Zarya as this crazy Russian character. We know that Widowmaker is French, right? We know that Genji and Hanzo are Japanese. We've got kind of like McCree as the like quasi-American character, you know? And so there's just all these different representations of different cultures, different locations. D.Va is supposed to be Korean, ostensibly, or from Korea at least. And so you've seen all these kind of cool representations of different cultures and locations in the game. And I feel like there's a lot of opportunity to expand that, because the universe of Overwatch is set, what, like 50, 60 years in the future after this so-called Omnic crisis and all the other things that have happened. There's a ton of really cool sort of cultural vibes that I don't see yet in Overwatch right now. They did a really great job of hitting, Japanese super well in characters and maps. They did a really great job, I thought, of the French culture stylings with Widowmaker, or the, I don't know, like Latin American feel that Lucio has, that kind of cool Cuban, Jamaican-esque thing that's going on with him and all. Like, obviously, it's very specific to one style of culture that they've envisioned for the future in Overwatch. But for me, I guess I would love to see some more like cool, maybe Western European cultures, some more Scandinavian cultures. I'm a little biased on that one personally. Also, I want to know what Africa is like 60 years in the future. It feels like that's kind of something they just didn't touch at all, right? What has happened? How progressive, how different is arguably a sixth of the world, right? A huge portion of the world that we just haven't talked about at all. Is there something crazy going on? Are we going to get like a cool Egyptian character? Are we going to get to play on an Overwatch map that's themed after like the ruins of the Sphinx or a pyramid? Like, I feel like there's just a lot of open questions about parts of the world that we haven't talked about at all.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, there's obviously a lot more room for stuff to grow here, and I am... this is a really cool question. I think this is something we can actually touch back on again and again. Okay, and I had to check really quick just to prove you wrong. Pharaoh is from Egypt.
So. Oh, you're right, of course. And Numbani, yeah. I guess, as a map, is supposed to be sort of African themed. But the point stands, right? Like, there's just a ton of stuff.
No, I totally agree. There's a lot to pull from.
Yeah, I don't think they've hit every cultural note. I mean, mm-hmm. I obviously just want to see as much of the world covered as possible, and they've done such a good job of that already. Like, some of those little details are obviously things that I, like, off the top of my head, yeah, I forgot Pharaoh was Egyptian, but yeah, like, it's just, I'm super thrilled with how cool the cast is and would like to see more of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's actually going to close it out for here. Do you have any shout outs for anybody to close out our show for this week on the payload?
I mean, it was a crazy week, so I guess if you are a Hearthstone fan, you should definitely go check out the last episode of Well Met, where we had special guest and former world champion Firebat. That was a super cool project, and we were really excited about that. Got to celebrate our one-year anniversary with him, and it's a really great show, and we're looking forward to another year of awesome Hearthstone-related podcasting. I was also a guest on this week's episode of The Angry Chicken, which is another really cool Hearthstone podcast. And if you didn't get to check that out, you should totally go listen to that and let me know what you thought. Obviously, looking forward to my trip to Vegas for work, but that does mean I'm going to be missing that first show in April. And other than that, I guess big ups to my soon-to-be former roommate. He and I are going our separate ways, which means I will be streaming. So if there's something you'd like to see me do on stream, it's still a ways out. It's probably a good solid 6 to 8 weeks till I get moved into the new place and get everything set up. But it's going to be something I'm going to put some serious time into. So hit me up on Twitter, @lackofrealism. Let me know what you'd like to see me streaming, and let's look forward to that. What about you, Mr. Jimmy?
Yeah, I've just been super busy with a lot of the Heroes community stuff. I mean, there's just all this stuff happening in the Heroes scene right now. I casted Heroes Hype last night, and as always, I have my show on here on BlizzPro as well, Tuesday nights, the Heroes Power. So there's always stuff to talk about there, and I'm really interested to see how... I'm actually really excited for Tracer in Heroes Storm. I don't know if you guys talked about that last week. But they really kind of previewed it, but that looks really fun, and I'm excited that it's happening a bit more quickly than I thought it would. I remember them saying when Overwatch was first announced, oh, they're like, oh, we're thinking about it might be a couple years, and it's like less than 2 years that we're getting Overwatch Hero into Heroes of the Storm. But I think that is basically it. Make sure, if you're interested in more Overwatch content during the week, check out overwatch.blizzpro.com. Thanks, as always, to Jake Butno for our music, jakebutno.ca. Dreadscythe at scythedesigns.com built this wonderful overlay for us. Check us out at Payload Podcast on Twitter. Email us, thepayload@blizzpro.com. iTunes reviews help us out a whole lot. If you can just go ahead and review there, and it just brings more listeners to our podcast. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and Google Podcast very soon, I think. And with that will be it. Have a good night. We will see you next week.
The Payload is a production of BlizzPro. Find out more about Overwatch at overwatch.blizzpro.com. You can find your host throughout the week on social media. Find Jimmy on Twitter @DJTyrant, Kevin on Twitter @LackOfRealism, and John on Twitter @KickedTripod.